So we are going to start a new series called Path to Your Purpose. Hey, before I get into it, Debbie and Matt Bury, I see you guys back here, man. Thanks for being here. These guys were part of our church for so many years. I remember we were meeting in the little bitty section and they started coming. And so thanks for being here, guys. And let's give them a big hand. They're part of the reason why we're here. So you know, I've said before, I've heard it said before, I stole this from somebody, that the two most important days in our life are the day that we're born and the day that we discover why. And so, you know, what is my purpose? And some of you may already know what that is. And so, you know, it's good to hear this again and let it refresh you and that type of thing. Some of you may not know. So the reality of some of you may be living it and not know that, oh, this is what I was created for. And this may be a day that you kind of discover, like, I've been doing that. And so over the next few weeks, I'm going to share with you a huge part of it. It's going to be my own personal story, because that's the story I know on how God revealed the purpose that he has for my life, the things that he took me through, the things that got us there, and that kind of thing. And so to reveal to you what it is that he's called you to do, what his purpose and his plan for you, what those things are and what they look like. And so if you would open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 4, if you're still learning your way around the Bible, know that there's an Old Testament and a New Testament, and Matthew is in the New Testament. It's the very first book of the New Testament. Matthew was a follower of Jesus. He was an eyewitness to many of the things that he wrote about. There were a few things that he clearly wasn't at, but he knew the eyewitnesses that were there, so he talked to them about different things. And so this is an eyewitness account of many of these things that happened. So in Matthew chapter 4, verse 18. So, you know, how do I know what my purpose is? Well, I think for me, there was a path to it. It wasn't like one day I woke up and go, hey, I know what I'm here for. I mean, it's just kind of been an ongoing thing that God has led me on. It's as I've endeavored to follow what it is he wants me. And I have good news for you. There's not a person in here that has probably made more mistakes, done more things, had more seasons of not just, oh, that was a mistake, but sometimes it was a choice to sin that I would make. And those kind of things. And God in his grace and his goodness still uses me. So I want to encourage you in that. If you feel like, hey, I'm disqualified or whatever, God's got a plan for you. And so it goes through Jesus, but he's got a plan for you. And so in Matthew chapter 4, verse 18, it says this: one day as Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, also called Peter, and Andrew, throwing a net into the water, for they fished for a living. So in other words, this is what they did. Up until this point, they were known as fishermen. It wasn't just a hobby they did. It was their identity. It was their business. It was their family business. It was their labor. Whenever people would see them, they go, oh, hey, there go those fishermen. Here goes Simon Peter, the fisherman. Here goes Andrew, the fisherman. And so they were throwing a net in the water, for they fish for a living. And Jesus called out to them, come follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people. And they left their nets at once and followed him. So when we're trying to discover what our purpose is, that the very first place it begins, number one is this, if you're taking notes, our path to purpose begins when we follow Jesus. That's where it begins at. It begins in that moment, that the minute we begin to follow him. And here's one of the reasons why, is because he made us. The only one, you know, or the one that would know best what our purpose is the one that made us. So as we follow him, he begins to reveal that. We could try so many ways to discover that, so many ways to look for that, so many books, so many things like that. But the reality of it is we'll never fully discover that. We'll never fully live it or recognize it until we begin to say, look, I want to be a Jesus follower. Now, I will tell you, my story is, I was brought up in church. It's what we did. And so we went to church every Sunday. You know, I went to a church that in Sunday school, they did perfect attendance things. They took your attendance. And so at the end of the year, if you had perfect attendance, you got a little pin. And so, we would go to church. And if we were out of town, we would go to church when we were out of town. And we would get their church bulletin and have the pastor sign it. And I would come back and show them, you know, as like 10 years old. Yeah, hey, I was in church last week. I don't know where the rest of you guys were, but I was in church. And so at the end of every year, they would give you, I remember the first year, I got a little pin. It said, like, you know, perfect attendance first year. The second year, I got like a little wreath they put around it. The third year, I had the third, fourth, and fifth years, they were just little bars that they added onto it. I looked like a military war veteran as I came in. I'm decorated. You know, and so the truth of the matter is, because that's just what we did. And I will tell you that I'm grateful for all of those things. And I had an awareness of God and of who Jesus is. But the truth of the matter is, I don't know that I was really a follower at that point. I was a believer and I was aware of him. But I don't know, I was really following. Well, the church I went to had a process called confirmation that you would go to, and it'd be kind of a class they would take you through and share different things. And then, you know, it was one of their ways of wanting to lead you into a relationship with the Lord. And I remember I went as a seventh grader because that was as early as you could go. And the truth of the matter is I didn't like going. But you say, why'd you go? Because I have a choice. My parents would look and go, well, I don't want him to rebel against church, so I don't make him. No, they didn't care. That thought never crossed their mind. You know what? They also made me go to school. They also wouldn't let me have candy bars anytime I wanted them. You know, that type of thing. There's just certain things where, like, he's not old enough to know what's best for him, so we're going to make him do this. Just a thought. Anyway, so, and at that point, many began to leave the church. And so, but I remember going to confirmation, and again, sometimes, you know, when I was being 12 and I was being 13, I thought the pastor was kind of rugged on me. And so I'd say something to my mom, and she was like, well, you know, it's too bad, get in the car, you know? And so we would go, but for whatever reason, there was a guy in the class, he was like a 10th grader, and he was just asking different questions, serious questions about his faith, about his walk with God. And I'd never really been in a situation like that where I'm sitting with somebody and they're asking those kind of questions, those serious questions about their relationship with God. I mean, they were different than the questions I was thinking about. And it really had an impact on me. I remember as this 12 and 13 year old, just, you know, he's a 10th grader. And so automatically I'm kind of looking up to him. He's an older guy and that kind of thing. But he's just asking different questions. And it grabbed my attention. And it just, you know, it kind of, you know, wiped off some of the dumbness of being 12 and 13. And so I'm listening to the questions going on. And I remember really for the first time in my life, my heart was kind of stirred up about what, you know, being a Jesus follower is. And so that impacted me. And so for the next couple of years, you know, I was going to Verdigris at the time. Verdigris only went to the eighth grade. And in my ninth grade year, I went to Claremore that time I'm 14, 15 years old, trying to discover, you know, again, kind of figure out who I am. And like either, I can't remember, I think it was my sophomore year, but in high school, it was either my sophomore or junior year. I think it was my sophomore year. There was a guy that I knew, and he went to summer camp, and Jesus impacted his life. And he came back, and he began to tell other students that I knew about his faith. And he was fearless in who he told. It wasn't just the people that were looking for his attention. It was people that other people would like, oh man, that person is they're the best athlete. They're the smartest person in school. He was fearless and went after every one of them kindly, but unapologetically about their relationship with the Lord. And it impacted my class. And so I remember we started doing Bible studies before school. And then we would do one Bible study a week at a friend of ours' house. And sometimes there'd be 70 students there. And one of the moments that was very impactful to me, I'm a guy that was brought up in church, went to church my whole life. And I was there one night and a friend of mine came up to me and she said, I didn't know you were a Christian. And she wasn't trying to be mean or anything like that. And probably had no idea the impact it had on me. I thought, man, I've done this almost every Sunday. I've got 5 years of medals that say I showed up every Sunday and she didn't know I was a Christian. What is it about my life that it's not recognizable? And it challenged me. And I thought, you know, Lord, I'm never going to be the guy that, you know, stands on a table and yells at people. And now I'm glad I'm not, because I don't think that's that effective. But I do want to be the guy that if you know me, that my faith is one of those things that's seen. And if I'm not sure you know Jesus, my faith is going to be one of the things I'm going to tell you about. And so it impacted me. I said, I don't ever want anybody that's known me as well as she does to ever have to have a moment like this that's known me for a few years. And now today, just because I'm at a Bible study, it's like, oh, you're a Christian? I was like, what does that say about my life? And so I really do think that at that point in my life is when I really, really, really got serious about being a Jesus follower, about making Jesus Lord of my life. And I made a decision to follow him. And that was when I really believed that God began to reveal to me the purpose that he had for my life, what his plan for my life is. And so one of the very first places, the path to our purpose begins in following Jesus. That's where it starts at. That's where it started for me. That's where it started for these guys. Hey, follow me and I'll show you how to fish for people. So our path to purpose begins when we follow Jesus. Look at number two. Go with me if you would to Luke 9. You're in Matthew. Luke is two books over. It's Matthew, Mark, and then Luke. Luke was he was actually a doctor. He was a physician that became a Jesus follower. Of the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, he was the only one that was not Jewish. He was a Gentile. And so he was very detailed in his writings in the Gospel of Luke. And he interviewed other people that were eyewitnesses to these different things and would ask them questions. And so these things would take place. And so Jesus is talking one time in Luke 9, verse 21, it says this, Jesus warned his disciples not to tell anyone who he was. The Son of Man must suffer many terrible things. Now look what he says. He's going to tell them about himself. He said, I'm going to have to suffer many terrible things. He said, he will be rejected by the elders. He said, I'm going to be rejected by the elders, which was very important to them because the synagogue and their Jewish faith was a part of their community. To be rejected by that means that you're rejected by your community. The leading priest will be rejected by the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. He will be killed. Notice he's saying, they're going to kill me. But on the third day, he will be raised from the dead. So I'll rise from the dead. Then he said to the crowd, if any of you wants to be my follower. Now, I don't know, I was reading this, and there's a part of me, and you know, I'm going to say, on the one hand, it's kind of like Jesus going, I'm getting ready to have all of these horrible things happen. Do you want to follow me? I'm like, that's not a great recruiting tool. Hey, I'm going to have all these, oh man, that's, Lord, man, we hate that for you. And man, it's crummy to be you, you know? And he goes, yeah, do you want to follow me? Oh, you know, so we lived in New Mexico for 17 years and there was an Air Force base there, Cannon Air Force Base. Now it's a special ops base. But I'd hear the airmen talk about it all the time, like, man, you know, how do I get out of here? I want to go, you know, and I'd always joke with them and say, yeah, I'll bet that they never, on your recruiting poster, they never said, join the Air Force and live in Clovis. I mean, I bet that was never one of the things that they told you. And so, you know, usually when people are trying to recruit you, they tell you all of the benefits, all of the good things. And Jesus is like, I'm getting ready to suffer. I'm going to be rejected. They're going to crucify me. Do you want to follow me? And so this is what he said. He goes, then he said to the crowd, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way. That's a pretty powerful statement. Like, if you want to follow me, you got to give up your way. You got to take up your cross daily. And when he said that, that wasn't a piece of jewelry that accented whatever piece of clothing we were wearing. It was one of them that it was a place of complete humiliation where you lost everything. Everything. You were exposed publicly. It was so excruciating that that's where we get the word excruciating from, is the word crucifixion. We had to create a word on how bad it was. We had to create a word that was connected to that. That the crucifixion, what excruciating, crucifixion, excruciating. And so he said this, that you're going to have to take up your cross daily and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it. Here's the second thing, the path to your purpose begins is following Jesus. Second of all, following Jesus requires me to set aside my agenda. Now, that's kind of a broad statement. I've said it before, but you know, it's just not as painful when it gets that broad. But whenever we begin to look at it and it becomes this, I wrote these things down, that it means transformation. Following Jesus means to align our lives with his teachings. To align our lives with his, in other words, I'm gonna do what he wants. An example, to embrace his values as our own. It signifies a willingness to leave behind old ways and habits, to take up our cross daily and to live out a commitment to him above all other influences. In other words, that he is the influence in our life. What he has to say is more important than what culture says, more important than what our family says, more important than what people around us. It's sometimes it's worth having to be misunderstood. And then also this, ultimately this reshapes our priorities, our actions, and our very identity. Remember when Jesus invited, commanded his disciples to follow him, they left their boats and nets, their identity and livelihood, began to obey his other commands, leaving their own priorities, began to learn from him, beginning to leave their own opinions, and began to imitate him, beginning to leave their self-righteousness. And so whenever we follow, if we're going to discover our pathway to his purpose, it begins by following him, but following him requires me to sit. There's a real price to that. There's a cost in that. I mean, these two guys, their identity was, hey, we're fishermen. And Jesus said, not anymore. Now you're this. Matthew, the one that wrote the gospel that we looked at earlier, he was a tax collector. And he was despised by the people he was taking the money from, his own people, and the people he was giving the money to, the Romans. The Romans despised him because he was a Jew, and the Jews despised him because he was taking their money to give to their enemies. And so he was a man without a community, a man without a family. And Jesus goes up to this man who was known as the tax collector. There's Matthew. And if you said his name, you probably added this onto it. There's Matthew, the tax collector. And Jesus came up to the tax booth one day when he's collecting taxes from the people. And he looked at him, he goes, follow me. Matthew left that at once and began to follow him. He was no longer, there's Matthew, the tax collector. There's Matthew, the Jesus follower. Now, there are people that saw him and still saw him by his old identity. And when they saw him, there's still some people that treated him based upon what he had done and how he'd behaved. But following Jesus means that at some point, he begins to tell us what our identity is and what we were made to do. Some people, you know, their identity may be like these fishermen. It's like, well, this was their occupation, it's what they do. Some people that, you know, your identity may be based upon the things that you achieved or the things that you did. Some people may be based upon what's taken place to you, the pain that you've experienced. Some may be based upon the pain that you've inflicted upon other people or your brokenness. Some may be on your own struggle. You know, people see you, the title they may put on you, hey, there's that person, they're an addict. Hey, there's that person, they're this, they're that. But when we begin to follow Jesus, all of a sudden the title that we carry as a Jesus follower is the one that he puts on us. And it requires us to say, I can't do this my way anymore. I have to do it his way. And so there's things that he calls us to do. I remember as I began to follow Jesus and try to determine what it was that he had for me to do, that there were so many things in my life that I considered and just, you know, so many ways that I wanted to go, but I had to discover what it is that he's called me to do. And so, you know, that on this path that I was on, that, you know, it changed. All right, here we go. This path that we're on, man, is such a long path, right? I mean, it's just one of those things that you know, there's so many seasons. And so what following him looks like changes from one moment to the next, and it requires decisions. And I remember that I began to go to Bible school, and I began to work at this ministry, and there was a season in my life that path was, that my identity was, I was the guy that was, you know, that I was serving in a shipping department. I worked in a mailroom. And I remember one time at the church, you know, I was there. I went to a church that on Sunday morning, you know, it had service Sunday morning and Sunday night. And I remember one time that they said, hey, we need ushers. And so I went up there afterwards and I'm like, okay, hey, I went up to the guy. Hey, the guy that made the announcement. I said, hey, I want to be an usher. He goes, well, we don't really need ushers. But I'm like, wait, you just said that we need. And he said, what I really need are parking lot attendants. And I'm like, I've been baited and switched. And so, and the truth of the matter is, it was the beginning of January, and you know how springy the weather is. Today is a great example, and I'm like, this is why you need parking lot attendants, and why you didn't say we need parking lot attendants, and why I'm the only guy up here going, okay, you know. And so he said, we need parking lot attendants, and so I'm like, okay, I'll do that. I'll be a parking lot attendant. Just do this, don't let anybody see you up here, okay? And so, I said, I'll do that. And I remember it was on a Sunday evening, and it was cold on the evenings. And then not only that, because it was in January, like a few weeks later after I started, how about that? Give this guy a big hand as you, Coach Zach Weber, wrestling coach and microphone fixer. A month later, the Super Bowl starting. And so, you know, I'm out there, but my identity, you know, setting aside my own agenda, taking up my cross daily, meant that in this season, this is what I'm doing. This is what that looks like for me. I remember that the school I was going to, the ministry I worked at one time, they were a ministry, it was a Bible school, just, you know, different things taking place, and they felt like God was leading them to become, for being a local church, to be a huge part of their identity. And so that meant they were starting doing Sunday morning services and all that. And I was working there, but I was already part of a local church. And So they made that announcement. And I remember I'm out on the shipping dock putting up stuff and actually just kind of talking to the Lord about it, like, Lord, am I, you know, I know I work here now, you know, they pay me. So should this become my church now? Or do you want me to stay at the place that I want? As I'm thinking about that, the person that's going to be pastoring the overseas ministry pulls up in his car and rolls down his window. And I lean over, he goes, hey, do you want to work with the teenagers or the singles? And I'm like, okay, God, I guess you're answering my prayer. I guess this is now my church. And so I go, teenagers? And he goes, okay. And he rolled up his window and drove off. And I thought, oh, the fanfare of that moment. I mean, it was just one of those things that, you know, there's not anything spectacular about it, not anything very celebratory. Matter of fact, if he would have said, hey, where do you want to serve? I probably wouldn't have picked either one of those areas out. And but little did I know, just that moment of willingness of saying teenagers opened up a door for me that, quite honestly, had it not been that door, I probably wouldn't be here today. And so it's just those moments of, thank you. Now, I got to be real honest with you. It's hard for me to share any moments like that that were good, because I think you know this would be true for any of us. You know, as long as my story is now as old as I am, I have a lot of seasons where I missed that boat. You know, I didn't give the right answer. And so I'm not saying that to exalt myself, just know this, but I know this, I've learned this, that yeah, even when we endeavor to follow God, we're still gonna fall. Proverbs says this, that the righteous may fall 7 times, but you know what they do? They get back up. Matter of fact, it says the only difference between the righteous and the ungodly is not whether they make mistakes or fall, it's the fact that when they fall, they get back up. The righteous may fall 7 times, but they get back up. The ungodly, they fall and they're utterly cast down. In other words, they don't get back up. Pastor Rick, I made huge mistakes, what do I do? Get up! God puts all these standards that, you know, if you're going to be called, if you're going to do this. Well, I'm not meeting those standards. Well, don't give up, rise up. You know, and so it's what God's called us to do. So in our story, laying aside different things as we go along, that looks different in different situations and in different settings and different circumstances. So I want to discover my purpose. It begins with this. Then follow me. Follow me. Okay, Jesus, I'll do that. Well, it's going to change who you are. It's going to change how you identify yourself. And eventually, it will change how people see you. And for some people, it's like, man, that's a good thing. And for others, it's like, I don't want them to see me differently. Well, being a follower of Jesus means that I don't get to identify who I am. He does that. He reveals who he created us to be. And so I want you to discover your purpose, man. I want you to discover something so big in your life that it's worth saying no to the things that have you captive right now. How can you say no to that? Because this is bigger. Jesus is better. And so that's why I can do that, because he's revealed to me part of what he's called me to do. And if I want to be there, this can't go with me. So they walked away from their fishing. He walked away from his tax booth. Mary Magdalene walked away from her prostitution. Zacchaeus walked away from his thievery. And they became Jesus followers. They let go of this, gave up this, said no to this, and yes to this. And in every season of our life along the way, that we have an opportunity to pick up things, and as we do, it may seem so meaningless or so simple or so uneventful, and yet it's one of those moments where we've just made the decision. It's the thing that is beautiful about it is it's what a Jesus follower would do in that moment. And it's hard to see why this can get me to this. But it's not up to us to determine how that path gets there. It's following Jesus that does it. So the second thing here is this, is that following Jesus requires me to set aside my agenda. Let's look at number 3 and we'll close with this. Go with me, if you would, to John 21. You're in Luke. John is the next book over. John 21, verse 15. And so Jesus, he's already been crucified, he's been raised from the dead, and now, you know, all the things have taken place. You know, Peter had denied Jesus, and so he says, hey, I'm gonna go fishing, and we don't know whether that was just, hey, I'm gonna go fishing, or if he was saying, I'm gonna go back to fishing. In other words, I've clearly failed at this following Jesus thing. So I'm gonna go back to, you know, how you guys knew me when you met me, and that is I'm gonna be a fisherman. Well, so they go out and they fish. They don't catch anything as they're coming in. They see Jesus there, and clearly he has fish on the grill. He's cooking fish for their breakfast, and he feeds them. And so then he looks at Peter, who's had this moment of failure. He says, after breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied, you know I love you. Then feed my lambs. Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. A third time he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said, then feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go. Jesus said this to let him know by what kind of death he would glorify God. Then after everything Jesus told him, all the suffering he's going to have to do, all the things are going to have to take place in life, then Jesus told him, follow me. There again is Jesus' recruiting tool. It's like, hey, all these bad things are going to happen if you follow me. Follow me. You're going to experience all this suffering if you follow me. Follow me. I mean, it was one of those things that was put out there. And he said, those things that you view as bad, they're opportunities for you to glorify me. The fact that you would say no to this thing that the world has to offer and say yes to this instead, even though it's painful to your flesh, it's your way of saying, Jesus is better and he matters more. And so he said, I want you, that's the road I want you to take. Follow me. Well, I love what Peter's response is. Peter goes, okay. No, that's not what he did. This is what he did. After Jesus said, follow me, Peter turned around and saw behind them the disciple Jesus loved. In other words, he says, follow me. And so Peter's kind of contemplating and he's looking around at all the other disciples and he sees John, the one that Jesus loved. And so he loved all of them, but that's how John identified himself. The one who had leaned over to Jesus during supper and asked, Lord, who will betray you? Peter asked Jesus, what about him? Is anybody gonna be leading him away? How's he gonna die? What about him, Lord? And Jesus replied, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? As for you, follow me. Follow me. And so if you're gonna discover God's plan for your life, that after you become a follower of Jesus, after you make that decision that, hey, I'm gonna take up my cross daily, I'm gonna lay these other things down, I'm gonna say no to some things I'll be glad to let go of. Some of them I've gotten so used to, they're just kind of, I'm kind of familiar with them, I'm gonna let go of those things too, and I'm gonna follow him. And in the meantime, I'm not gonna be distracted by what's going on around me or in other people's lives. I'm following him. Again, you know, the way to the Father is the same for all of us, and that's through Jesus. We all get there the same way, and it's through Jesus. There's no other way. But the path to how we get to the place that he has for us and what he's called us to do differs from one person to the next. Again, for me, it was that moment in junior high, that moment in high school, that moment in college whenever I made the decision to go to Bible school. It was that moment whenever I went to work at that ministry, not as a preacher, not as a teacher, but a guy that worked in the shipping department, sending out books and tapes, you know, on the loading dock, unloading boxes. I went to Bible school for that. It was in that moment wondering who would see me. I felt invisible in those things. And yet God opened up a door for me to be do youth ministry in Arkansas. And then that led to New Mexico. And so many times we can get off path, we can get off track because it doesn't look like what somebody else's path is. But what is that to me, follow him? We just, so many times, you know, that instead of just trusting him in that moment and trusting that he knows best. You know, I'm from here, as I've said, and we did youth ministry in New Mexico for 17 years. And I remember I was early in New Mexico. New Mexico State, it's like the fifth largest state, I think. And so it's different. Like here, if I'm headed to Catoosa, but I get my C towns mixed up and I end up in Chelsea, I know like 20 minutes later, like, oh yeah, I'm not supposed to be in Chelsea. In New Mexico, towns can be 100 miles apart and there's nothing between this city and the one you're going to but a bunch of jackrabbits and cactuses. And they all look the same. And I remember, I'm fairly new there, and this We're in Clovis, and there's a town called Roswell. Maybe you've heard of it. And so a lot of shady things going on out in Roswell. But there was a church there, and they wanted me to bring some of our teenagers and minister to their youth group. I was so honored. I'm like, yeah, man, we'll take them out there, and they'll minister to them. Well, I'd never been to Roswell before. And so we drove, and about 20 miles from Clovis is a little city called Portales. And then for the next 100 miles, there's not anything but jackrabbits and cactuses. And so finally we get into Roswell, and, you know, we're keeping our eyes open for any, outer space aliens that might be there or whatever. And so we pull into the church, we minister, teenagers' lives, their stories are impacted, and that kind of thing. It was such a great night. And then we're leaving, and we're engaged in conversation. And apparently on the way out, there's an exit you have to take to connect with the road that gets you back to Clovis. I didn't see it. I drove for 100 miles. After 100 miles, I'm like, man, how far is Portales? It was before we had smartphones. And I'm like, we got to be close to Portales. And I'm seeing hardly nothing. Well, finally up ahead, I see an Allsup's. Thank God for Allsup's. And so we pull in, and I get out, and I go into the person at the counter, and I said, hey, man, what town are we in? He goes, you're in Vaughn. And I said, oh, my gosh, Vaughn, where is that? And he said, well, it's in New Mexico. I'm like, oh, thank God, we're at least in the right state still. So I said, well, how far is Clovis? He goes, you're 100 miles from Clovis. I'm like, oh, Lord, you know, I'm okay with being 100 miles, but I got to go out and tell a van full of teenagers that put the children of Israel in the wilderness to shame as far as complaining. So you know how they are. They're all sleeping, and I have to go out and wake them up long enough and tell them, hey, look, man, we're going to, we get out on the payphone, call your parents, and we're going to be 2 hours later and that kind of thing. And they're sleeping the whole time. And if they call their parents, they're going to get back in and sleep. But they got to do one thing first after they call their parents. And that is complain for the next 10 or 15 minutes I made the wrong turn. I'm the one that's got to stay up and make the turn. And so I get back on, and finally 2 hours later, we're pulling into town. But I thought, how often, man, is our life that way that we get so distracted in what's going on around us and what other people are doing that we forget to say, God, is this what you want me to do? That it's not about the path that the Lord chooses to get them to where he wants them to go. And just because it looks different than mine, or just because, it may look easier than mine, doesn't mean that they don't have their own suffering that they have to do, their own pain. But even if it's not suffering filled, even if it's not painful, that's none of my business. What is that to me? Follow him. And so for that we have to be willing to do it, to commit to God's plan for me. God, I don't understand how doing books and tapes, why you would call me away from, pursuing this one thing to have me in this, but I'm yours, I'll do this. Lord, I don't understand how, making this decision, okay, I'll work with teenagers, and then later on that takes me to a place where I end up being a volunteer in a youth group, and then it takes me to a place where my heart is stirred up, and then creates this dissatisfaction that is so huge of like, this is my prayer, God, if this isn't of you, take it away. Only to have him open up a door that takes me to a place, that takes me away from my family. I remember when I drove, I'm an only child, and I drove, away as my parents were helping us load up the truck. And I drove, and I thought, I'm leaving them to themselves as they get older, knowing that they don't have any other sons or daughters to take care of them. But I said this to the Lord as I'm leaving. I'm like, Lord, I believe part of my responsibility in honoring them is to care for them. So I'm asking you to extend their life and extend their days. And God was faithful. He's faithful. As we follow him and do those things, he helps us. And so as we discover the path to our purpose is committing to God's plan, the one that he has for me. And to keep our eyes on that, not get distracted. Comparison becomes a great thief to us. It steals our joy. It steals our focus. It steals so many things. It steals our thankfulness. And so to follow his plan for my life. Let's just bow our heads and close our eyes for just a minute.